Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 749. If you're in Los Angeles on October 24th, fun, comfortable tour, doing stand-up at the Regent Ballroom downtown Los Angeles, a place that not a lot of people, well, people do go downtown. Do you ever go downtown?
I do. I like downtown.
You do?
Yeah. Well, they have some good bars down there, like Bar 107. Is that still there, though?
I don't know. I don't drink. How would I know if Bar 107 is still there?
I know there's like some weird shit happened.
Unfortunately, there's no tool that we have to ever find out if that bar is still open.
I think I was like, yeah, I like downtown. Is that bar still there?
Go to funcomfortabletour.com. But there are sports things that happen downtown.
And yes, I go to Clippers games.
You enjoy sports things.
I
Clippers
do.
Play at the
Staples Center.
At a Staples.
Mm-hmm. At a Staples. They play at the Staples.
They play at a Staples.
In the aisles.
Yeah. Is that one of those? They're pretty hefty stores.
You know, they're really wide.
Just move
wide
the office
aisles.
Furniture out of the way. They can set the hoops up
they
there.
They just make the hoops out of paper clips.
Yeah. And they just knock the file folders
the
out of the way.
Balls.
And that.
It works.
The little picture of the guy that looks like Clippy. And, Clippy for the Clippers!
Exactly, that's
Clippy
what it
the
is.
Clippers. Well, didn't Steve Ballmer buy the Clippers?
Yeah.
So then
it should be.
So a Clippy should be. I can't be the first person who arrived at that conclusion. That had
I've
to
never
have
heard that actually.
That had to have existed before me. I'm sure it did. Clippy being the
Clippers
being the mascot for the Clippers.
Dude,
how can I be of help
this,
for this basketball team?
I love to think if they're losing, it just shows up like, I see you're trying to win this basketball game.
Why don't you wrap your metal prong around the ankles of the opposing team and be of service in some way, Clippy? That's your real name. What do you got on the Nerdist Community Corkboard?
This one is from the Arcade Comedy Theater in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and the arcade is roasting the man of your dreams, Freddy Krueger, featuring an all-star lineup of horror icons, including Norman Bates, Mrs. Voorhees, Chucky, Hannibal Lecter, and more. And you can find more. Actually, they don't have a website, but you can find it out. It's called the Arcade Comedy Theater. It's on Liberty Avenue in Pittsburgh, and it's on Friday, October 30th at 8 p.m., and it's only $10.
I like that you discovered that as you were reading it. You can find them on the, well, there's no website.
I thought there, I scrolled down, and I was like, oh, they didn't put a website.
Use your Google Foo and just Google it.
Yeah.
And you can find out more info. This episode is Kirsten Dunst, who was wonderful. She's promoting season 2 of Fargo, which is an amazing show the cast this year is. I mean, you know, how do you follow up the first season of an amazing show with an entirely different cast and then and somehow be able to maintain, if not top, the level of quality?
I'm so excited because that first season was one of the best things I've ever watched.
It's
and this,
Mondays.
This, I love this season.
Mondays at 10 on FX. And so watch Fargo. And also this podcast brought to you by Tor Books, America's largest publisher of science fiction and fantasy. Over 35 years of fiction from folks like John Scalzi, Catherine Valente, and many, many more. You can read the number one New York Times best-selling book by Brandon Sanderson, Shadows of Self. Shadows of Self is the latest epic fantasy in the Mistborn series, taking place after the Alloy of Law. It follows noble-born lawman Wax and his buddy Wayne on the trail of an assassin intent on starting a world-shaking rebellion. Shadows of Self by Brandon Sanderson is available now wherever books are sold. IO9 said that it was one of their top fall science fiction and fantasy picks. So take that, naysayers.
Dude, that website's legit.
And you can just shut up about it, naysayers. Here's the Nerds Podcast number 749 with Kirsten Dunst.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
And there's not really an official start. This is just sort of it's already happening. It's
okay.
Happening right now.
Great.
We're in it.
We're the only people conversating.
It's just us. It's just us. Have you done a lot of long form interview stuff?
No, I don't think I had. Not like recorded. No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've always wanted to do Howard Stern, but I haven't
I feel
done
like
that
you
yet.
Could easily do Howard Stern if you wanted to.
I could. It's just, you got to be careful.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
You really do.
Because I'm someone who I know he could make me very comfortable, and then I would say things I would regret later. You know what I mean? Like, yeah.
You're not worried that...
I don't have good filters, so...
No, you don't need them.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't need them here.
No.
But I feel like That's funny. I didn't expect that that would be the reason that you'd be nervous about going on. I thought it would be that he would hit you with stuff. You'd be like, oh, I don't want to talk about that, you know?
No, I'd probably overshare or something. Or like, because when you're comfortable with somebody, then you want to talk about things. And with him, I just, you know, things can get – it's not his show. If it were, if we didn't live in like this media,
right?
Like pick apart everything you say – it wouldn't matter, but
right.
We don't. So that it's a disservice to everybody at the end of the day, you know, because it's not.
Well, that's why I think long form is so good, is because it's not soundbitey.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's no, you know, like there's not going to be anything where someone's going to pick apart something that you say and just focus on that and just put that out in the world.
Oh, yes, they do. Are you kidding me, Chris?
For us, I mean, we're not
going
to.
Yeah, not you guys, but yeah, other people can always.
Well, it's also because you don't do a lot of this stuff and because you don't really – I mean, there was a period – I don't know if you remember this, but there was a period you and I were on the same talk show circuit and we did Fallon and Conan on the exact same episodes within 2 weeks of each other.
Really?
Like 4 years ago.
On the same episode. And oh, that's so funny.
Yeah, I did. We did Fallon when he was doing his other – before he took over The Tonight Show.
Right.
And then 2 weeks later, we were both on Conan at the same time, just by sheer coincidence.
That's so funny.
And but normally you don't really do a lot of that stuff.
Me? You mean talk shows and stuff?
Yeah.
I just haven't had much to promote. I mean, the last thing I promoted was this little indie called Two Faces of January, and I think I went on Conan for it. But I did a movie. It's just not coming out till next year, and it was supposed to come out the year, like last year, and now it got pushed again. It was going to come out this year, and now it's coming out next year. So I have been working. I did take a year off, though.
Well, I think the oversharing thing is interesting because you're not really on social media a lot.
I have Twitter, but I just use it for work stuff mostly.
Yeah, just for work stuff.
Yeah.
But as a human being, you have an innate need to be understood. And so when, if someone writes something or you see something,
yeah,
do you fight the urge to be like, I need to go talk about this publicly so people understand me?
I've thought that, but then I think it's best not to say anything because then it kind of keeps feeding it anyway. And so it's better to just keep your mouth shut. That's what I always do. But I haven't been put in such an extreme situation where I really felt the need to defend myself. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just been like, oh, okay, whatever there.
Do you ever get used to it? I mean, you've been doing it your whole life pretty much. Do you ever get used to that stuff or no?
You know how to take it in a way where it doesn't affect you in affect your day or affect your insecurities or whatever. It doesn't really matter. Like, I've come to a point in my life where I can live a very private life, and people write negative things. It happens to everybody. You know what I mean? I even talk about other people. You know what I mean? It's not like I'm sitting around being like, everyone's great. So it's just the way, you know, people are allowed to have their opinions about
it. I think
actors.
What the Kardashians doing is really positive for
our
culture.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think fame at all costs is good. I think that's a good role model for young people to do anything to be famous.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
It's such a strange time. And having been in the business before there was social media, before there was any of that stuff, and it was really just a handful of gossip magazines, I mean, you've seen it explode since you were a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think the ubiquity of information is a good thing? We should all have all the information in the world. Or like, maybe not.
Huh. I mean, it's good and it's bad. It's like, I mean, I was writing a script. I'm writing a screenplay with my girlfriend right now. And like, we always joke, like, brought to you by Google. Because it happens in the 1950s. We're like, wait, did they have mustard that you could squirt out? Let's Google it. Like, so in a way, it's really helped.
Yeah.
And then in the other way, in the media way, I think I was lucky that I didn't grow up, you know, with the paparazzi bothering me, because I look at someone like Elle Fanning, who I know, I'm like, oh my God, she's still in high school. Leave the girl alone. You know, it's just creepy. At a certain point, it's like a man is chasing a 17-year-old girl, which is, that's just weird.
Right. Well, also because you're the most emotionally vulnerable when you're in your teens, because you're developing your identity and your body's changing, and you certainly don't need people commenting on. I mean, it's like, that to me seems the absolute worst. This seems like the worst time to be a teenager.
Yeah, no, I agree. Just like, I couldn't imagine being in high school right now and having Instagram and everybody and like all of that pressure. And it's already hard enough high school, like to have you know, everybody judging you and all this social media is just, I that would be scary for me as a kid too.
You don't even need to be famous really.
No, you
for
don't.
That. It's just like everyone's kind of famous because everyone's got social media.
It's true.
Yeah. And did you go to Notre Dame,
I
right?
I did. Yeah. In Sherman Oaks.
Ah, because I went to Loyola for a year.
You did?
Which is the Catholic high school experience.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I went to Laurel Hall before that. I started sixth grade in the Valley from New Jersey. So I've always gone to normal schools though. That was a good thing that my parents did for me because I always had a seat at the lunch table and my best friends. And I feel like I had a very normal childhood considering what I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, especially in Los Angeles, because I think people are just used to, I know she's on stuff and that guy's on stuff. And
yeah. But in the Valley too, growing up in the Valley, it's so different. I still live in the Valley. It's just such a different mentality. I don't know. It's so much more mellow. There's parking. Like, I live with a bunch of, like, people and their families. You know what I mean? I live with a bunch of old people. I mean, I feel more comfortable there. But I think that when you're in the scene of LA, that's when you really start to, like, lose your mind, I think, a little bit. Because, you know, I also have my family lives in Los Angeles, too. So it's not like I have no roots. You know what
sure.
I mean? So I lucked out, I think.
I love the Valley at Halloween because there are so many neighborhoods in the Valley that are relatively uncharacteristic of the rest of Los Angeles.
Oh yeah, no, I live in one of them. It's Toluca Lake where I live is like one of the biggest Halloween places in the United States, like ranked to go trick or treating. So you do not shut your door. Like this year, I'm going dark and not opening to the public, but. You just sit there. You don't even like you buy hundreds and hundreds of dollars of candy. You just sit there and pass out all night. You don't even shut your door. So it's kind of exhausting. It's not even fun at a certain point.
I just imagine the absolute joy in some 11-year-old boy's eyes when he is dressed as Spider-Man and you open the door.
Yeah, but I'm also dressed up, so nobody recognizes me either.
What's your favorite costume?
I've done some good ones. I've been slacking a little bit recently, I feel like. But the best one I did was The Night Porter, which was this Charlotte Rampling movie where I did wear a bodysuit, but she was kind of like – she was naked and she had just suspenders on with like this – like military hat, and it was just and leather gloves. It was a cool costume,
but
it was like it's a very underground weird cult film, but that was a good costume.
I'm thrilled to know that you embrace Halloween. Have you been to Halloween Horror Nights yet?
I did once, and it was so terrifying because I think some of the people recognized me, and so they went after me harder than anyone else. So they like I went to a little restaurant to eat. And or to chill out for a minute because I'd been screaming so much with my friends. And they'd come up to the back of my chair and just hold the fake chainsaw against it until I got it. I was just like, where is their peace? Like, I was exhausted by the end of it. I was so tired. I'd screamed so much. And the bathroom is the only safe place.
When I went into the bathroom, I waited for a stall because I'm like, I don't want some guy in a weird hockey mask running in while I'm at the wall urinal. And I have to be like, okay,
oh,
you got.
Oh, that's terrible.
Because I never know. I always feel like for them, you want to acknowledge the performers. They're like, oh, you got me. You're doing your job.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Versus like, okay, come on.
Yeah,
I get it.
Leave me alone.
Yeah, I got it.
Stop chasing me now.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't fun anymore.
But it was really fun. I went with a group of six people, and it was really fun this year.
Really?
If you get a chance.
I did that with a big group, too. It's just like our crew is so dramatic and sensitive. I feel like, I don't know. I just remember when my one friend crying. I was like, oh, God.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Yeah, that's, if you go in costume...
Yeah, that will help.
I think that would probably help.
Do you go in costume?
No, you know.
Does anybody? People do?
Some people. No, I don't know if
I don't think
does.
You're. Maybe you're not allowed to.
You're not allowed.
Because you can mess with people. And like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Actually, that's part of the reason that freaked me out a little bit about it, too, because I was thinking to myself, anyone could come in here, put on a mask, and really mess with people in a dark way. So.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's true.
Yeah.
Ah, damn it.
I know.
All right. Well,
yeah.
So much for that.
Yeah, no
well, that's how people, that's how people, that's how some famous people get through Comic-Con. It's like they'll just put on the costume.
Yes.
But I get it. And they're very protective, rightfully so. One of the performers, there's a whole section that's the Purge.
Uh-huh.
So you get out and then it's like, oh, there's anarchy, because the Purge is happening.
Uh-huh.
And someone ran up to one of my friends and got in their face and he just sort of stood his ground a little bit. And the security guard came in and be like, hey, you got, don't mess with the performers. Like, he wasn't messing with him. He was just.
But it's hard. I mean, if someone scared me that, I would hit them. Obviously. Like, you know what? It's just your natural reaction as a person.
They are swinging foam weapons an inch from your face, and so you could get hit in the face,
yeah,
ultimately. But
yeah.
But it's really fun. It's really. The mazes are great this year.
I'm not going back. No, thank you.
You should buy Bob Hope's house in Toluca Lake. It's been for sale forever.
Oh, I know. It was $25 million.
What?
But now they knocked it down to 12, which I can't afford. So, but otherwise, I would. I would love that Toluca Lake estate right there. And then there's a little, there's like a one hole golf course on it and stuff like that.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
$12 million, damn.
I mean, someone really has to love the valley to spend $12 million on
that. Or Bob Hope, like, yeah.
Yeah.
Or at least just want that section of it. Because I was curious, so I looked at the pictures inside the house. I'm like,
yeah.
It doesn't really seem like a $12 million house.
No,
like,
it needs to be totally updated, that house. I love that we're talking about houses. And if you're an avid golfer, they have the golf club right there, too. So basically, an avid golfer.
Well, my fiance and I just bought a house. And we've been in the mode of just looking at stuff and seeing what people are doing, and you know,
I love looking at houses.
So it's so much fun. Yeah.
Where did you guys buy? Or you don't want to probably say?
Just in the Los Feliz area.
Yeah,
yeah, Los Feliz, Hollywood. I've already been there for years, and it's just, I like it because it's central. There's views of the city, but it's close to the valley. It's close to Hollywood. It's close, and you also don't feel like when you get up into the hills. It's very peaceful, but
yes,
you're 2 minutes away from everything.
Yeah. I feel you. I like Los Angeles.
I like that area. Is it? But but Toluca Lake, it feels so. It's got such a good vibe to it.
Yeah, I relax immediately when I drive into Toluca Lake. I don't know what it is. I'm like, and it feels kind of East Coasty too.
Used to be the undiscovered secret. Toluca Lake was like, you can buy a house in Toluca Lake for not a lot of money. And then the secret got out, and now it's
still not bad though.
Oh, really?
It's not bad at all. No, it's not. And like, people can live a very low-key lifestyle there.
You got that snazzy Bob's right there, and then they closed Moe's, which was a great restaurant.
I never went to Moe's.
Oh, it was so good.
Oh, and now they have Foreman's, which is Laurel Tavern, but on Riverside, which is really nice. It's like a burger joint. We're getting better and better places. We have a good sushi place. We need like one really great restaurant, though. We don't have that.
No.
No.
You know, you
like
need
a fancy, yummy one for
dinner. I'll tell you what you have to do. You have to let Toluca Lake become an economically depressed area so that food hipsters come in and try to revitalize it with weird, like a weird grilled cheese snack bar.
That's slowly happening. It is. No, it's like people aren't as dismissive of the valley as much anymore, I don't think.
No.
As they used to be.
No.
Yeah.
It really, because... If you, the Valley, I think a lot of people think of the Valley as just Ventura Boulevard.
Yeah.
Which is a...
Tom Petty, I would too. I'd just be like, yep.
Because by and large, Ventura Boulevard is a very ugly street, just in terms of how fast all the buildings went up.
Yeah.
And it developed, it grew very quickly, and so everything just feels like, 1977, don't update that. And
yeah.
But other parts of the Valley are very nice.
I think as I grew up there partly, it's cozy to me.
Sure.
Yeah. But if I didn't grow up there, I might be like, this is really ugly. Maybe
there's that one stretch. There's that one stretch where it's like Chin Chin and then Nate and Al's.
Oh, yeah. I avoid that little stretch.
And then the porno place that's been there forever, God. I've heard.
How is it still in business? You know what? My girlfriend and I
don't know that it is. I didn't say that it was. I was just guessing.
There's a place called Second Spin where you can buy CDs.
Oh, yeah. Second Spin's great.
Still, but how is that still? And they have a big spot there, too. I'm like, how is that still open?
Because I think some people really like the idea of having physical things in their hands.
Yeah.
And I almost think there's probably a bigger market for – I think there's more for like aftermarket music than a music store, because people like to go in and buy albums and CDs, and there's a cassette movement now too, which is completely baffling to me.
Yeah, I don't know. I think my friend's car still has a cassette. I sold her my old Prius and it still has a cassette.
What were the cassettes in your car? Do you like books on tape or what?
To be honest, the cassettes from my car were just the cassette so you could hook your iPod to
speaker. Sure.
So that's the only cassette I ever used in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what are you listening to on your iPod?
What do I listen to? I'm like, what do I listen to? You know what? Of new stuff, I like The Weeknd. I like Rihanna.
That's okay.
I just like fun music now.
Yeah.
Or like sad. I like you know, I kind of became that person that was so into music and knew every indie band, and now I don't know them at all.
It's very hard to keep up. It takes a tremendous amount of energy.
It does. And, like, I don't know. I just rather put on, like, Guns N' Roses or something. I don't know. I just, like, I listen to K-Day, and I listen to it's whatever, it's a college community radio station that's really good, and that's where I like listen to the young people's music. But I sound like so old. I'm only 33, but
these kids,
you know, I'll Shazam artists, but then I'll never actually buy them.
Oh yeah. Or I will buy from Shazam and then never listen to the
never.
I discovered like 80 songs on my iPhone that I'd forgotten about when I was transferring over to my new computer. And it just said, oh, you have purchases on here. I do. It was like 80 songs. Like, oh, my God, I bought all of these and have no memory of them whatsoever.
I know. My purchases are like, you spent 99 cents getting more lives on like Farm Heroes. And that's really depressing. I've quit that now. But there was a time where I got emailed about three times about the few dollars I had spent on that game.
So the script that you're working on.
Yes.
How do you motivate yourself to work?
Well, I have a friend, so that helps to have a co-writer.
Be accountable.
That really, yes, exactly. And we had a deadline recently, so that helped as well. But we would just, it's a kind of thing where like we could keep rearranging and making better, and there's so much freedom within. It's based on a book, but it's really could make it any way you can. I mean, so it's not intelligent at all.
It does.
But what it is like it's a kind of book that's so. It's just could be so didactic and bad, or you could really make a life of something. So you really have to make your own scenes up, and it's very hard. It constantly gets better, so we can stay up till like 4 a.m. every day while I was doing press. Then I have to go do press. Then, you know, she'd be writing and fixing things. Then I'd come home, and like then I'd have to go do a TV show again. But I was up till like 5 a.m. every day doing press for Fargo, which was not the best for me mentally, but I had to do it, you know?
Yeah. And still finding time and energy to work on the book. What's the book?
I can't talk about it.
Oh, you can't talk about it.
I know. Soon, maybe. Yeah. It's early stages, but it's a book that most women have read.
And is this a process that you enjoy?
I'm directing it, so I enjoy it just because, like, I get to write exactly what I want to see. So, and I think that the way I'm approaching it is very funny. So it's going to be a dark comedy, and I already have my actress and everything like that. But I've wanted to direct for a long time. So
particularly, like, what is it specifically that, because to me, I say this all the time, directing sounds like such a nightmarishly.
Oh, it's a war.
Yeah.
It is. No, it is a war. Like, but as an actress, you pour your heart out, and then it's taken over by everyone else. And with this, you know, I can really, and I also don't have to get into hair and makeup either, but, you know, I can show up to work, look like a slob, and just focus on what I want to see rather than having all this, creating a character and then having it just taken into somebody else's hands completely. So
yeah.
It's just seeing the whole process through is what excites me.
I mean, being an actor and particularly being an actress, there's so much, unfortunately, there's so much that people focus on that have nothing to do with your actual work.
Yeah.
That it seems like you really just need to enjoy the process more than anything else.
You do, and I do. Like, that's the best part of what I do. And then if it does well, that's just, like, amazing. You couldn't ask for, like, with Fargo, the fact that we, you know, the first season was so great and now this season is being heralded is just like, we couldn't have hoped
for
more.
You know, you and Ted Danson and Patrick Wilson and Jean Smart. I mean, it's an incredible cast.
It's such a good cast. And Noah was so good at picking people that were like, not only so perfect for the role, but also really good people. You know what I mean? Everyone's really nice. And I know we all hung out. I hung out the most with Jesse Plemons, who plays my husband in it, who is in Friday Night Lights.
And Breaking Bad, yeah.
Yeah, and Breaking Bad and Black Mass now. So it was a very hard process, but the fact that everyone was like a good person and kind, like no one was a diva, no one had issues or anything. Everyone just like did their work and wanted to do the best they could because no one wanted to be the person on the show that, you know, wasn't wasn't up to par with all the rest. So I think it made all of us having coming from a season that did so well to like do even better or try at least.
Did you like? Was it fun to do television again? I assume it probably just feels like doing a long movie.
It does. It's hard. It's harder work because, like, especially with my character, I'd have six. I had like one day where I had 6 pages of dialogue. It's just me talking, and like we're working till 2 a.m. So the schedule, and you don't get as many takes either. So the schedule, you have to be on it more so than a film because there's 11 pages to get through in the day, and with films, there's like 5.
Yeah, were you? Were you emotionally prepared? Because listen, the pervasiveness of nerd culture,
mm-hmm.
which is basically just pop culture now.
Yeah,
a lot of that happened because of X-Men and Spider-Man. Were you remotely prepared for how much of a thing that movie became when you made it? Or do you not think in those terms?
I thought, listen, the auditioning process was rigorous. Like, there was definitely, like, I met with Sam almost a year before I even auditioned for it. So I knew that this was going to be something special with him directing. And Toby at the time was a heralded indie actor. You know what I mean? So all the pieces were coming together as a really interesting independent film, but on this huge scale of Spider-Man. So to me, it was so, I wanted to be a part of it because I knew that it felt like it could be a really good quality film on top of the fact of being really successful, hopefully. So for me, I wanted to be a part of it so badly. And yeah, I mean, I mean, it's Spider-Man, so you already have a huge audience. And
doesn't mean it's going to be good, though.
Doesn't mean it's going to be good.
And it was.
Yeah, and I think that's because we had Sam Raimi directing it. You know what I mean? You can't just throw any director that has a successful indie into making a huge movie. Like, Sam has a legacy. You know what I mean? It's not like, I don't know. I think that sometimes studios want control, and so they have directors that are not necessarily qualified, maybe, or it's just, it's hard to keep telling these stories over and over again, too. It's not like, you know, to the fact that they already rebooted Spider-Man was just so quick, and like, I don't know. I think it's unnecessary, but I don't know. They made a ton of money, but
it was
like,
it was a rights issue. It was the issue of Sony needing to retain the rights. They had to make a film, or they had to give up the rights. So it really just boiled down to like a legal thing of like, oh my god,
but,
seriously?
But we were going to make a fourth film before they ended up doing that.
Oh,
that got like, stopped basically. So then they decided to reboot it.
Do you want to go make it now? We can just go make it now. Let's go make it happen now. I mean, when your work, it's Sam, who's been on the podcast and is a lovely guy.
Yeah.
I mean, when you work with, I'm curious to know that now that you're taking on directing, are there things that you specifically learned from directors that you've worked with that you absorbed kind of observing them? So for Sam, what is there anything that you picked up?
I mean, Sam, for such a large set, kept an impressive amount of intimacy with his actors and things, because we did have 3 units at sometimes going on at the same time. And like, I never felt, of course, there were those days where you're just sitting around for hours and you end up doing nothing. And like, you know, we have those days where it's all special effects stuff and stunt stuff. But when it came down to the scenes, it was always felt very important. You know, like, oh, okay, we got to get through this to get to the, you know, action scene that comes next. And like, he created a very, because we did 3 films together, it felt like coming back to a great family every time, which was nice. But for most of the directors I've noticed that I like working with, they create an intimacy on set. Like, it's quiet. No one's yelling action. No one's screaming. Like, the first AD, everyone is in the same kind of tone where it feels safe for the actors and it's calm, and I like that the best. I mean, for me as a director, I would trust my actors 100%. I'm not somebody who needs to talk things to death. Like, I feel like you know, that's your job as a director, to like hire the best person for the job. And I think like trusting your actors is the best thing, and your gut immediately in whatever you're doing. And it's just who you build around to support you, I think, and your tastes, basically. And that's all. Then you hope, then, you know, you hope that it turns into something great, but it, you know, from writing it, then it's going to change again from making it, and then it'll change again. So it's just, you have to be able to adapt with that, I think. And I've spent my whole life adapting. So it's, you know what I mean? I think it will be something that that I'll be able to make, you know, quick decisions on under stressful situations, and I won't really be freaked out, you know?
Yeah. But so when you say you spent your whole life adapting, what are you referring to?
Like, I mean, I've always had to, you know, come in and out of school, live in different countries, and, you know, it's just different personalities, different directors, different actors you're working with. You're constantly having to, like, kind of, because I'm not somebody who wants to make a scene. Like, I'm someone who wants to be left alone, you know, like, even on set. I never have assistants or anything. I just, the more people that surround you, the harder it makes to do your job, I feel sure. like. So for me, I've just, I think when you're young and, you know, you're having to do your schoolwork and now you live in Vancouver and then, you know, you have to go home and pick up again, like, there was no blip, but, like, I've always had to, I think that my brother did too, because he traveled with us too. So it made him like way more worldly, and he is better with people for it, but it's definitely like not, you know, a normal childhood in that sense.
And did you ever want that, or did you like it?
I liked it because I didn't love school. Like, I was happy to leave. You know what I mean? I had like 2 month minimum, and I'm like, I'm ready to work again.
Yeah.
Just because it was so boring to me. I don't know. School was just like, I think I was stressed a little bit because I never wanted to be singled out as the actor in school.
Sure.
So I was always really nice to everyone because, I mean, that's who I am, but I never wanted to be singled out as like, you know, you're a bitch because you act. You know what I mean?
Right.
Anything like that. And I did have my good girls crew, like if anyone said anything, they'd have my back. But what were you talking about? That now I lost my train.
We were talking about having a normal childhood.
Oh yeah, okay. So yes, I'm happy I got to leave school. I do think it would have been fun to like be in drama. I was in the drama class, but like to be in a school play or a musical, I would have liked that. And I did miss. I went to most of the important things and school dances and things, but you know, there were the occasional thing that I missed that like I wish I would have gone to. But as a whole, I had a pretty good, you know, I got to go to the fun stuff, you know.
Maybe you know,
I miss like the night at Disneyland after, you know, like the senior,
yeah.
Like I miss a few of those things that bum me out.
I feel like you could go back and do all those things. You could just get your friends together and be like, seniors. And if you wanted to, I bet you could do a school play. You could just walk into a school in the valley and go, hey, I'm Kirsten Dunst. I'd love to be in your school play. And that would be such a punk rock move.
Oh, my God.
Just be like, oh, I was just in our town at, you know, Coldwater. Yeah. Just for the fuck of
Coldwater Middle School. Yeah,
why
whatever.
Not? Why
yeah.
not? Why not? Like, it,
hey,
just, and
that would be very James Franco of me.
or you know, Will Ferrell. Like, these are guys that just, like, they just do whatever they want.
That's true. That's true.
I mean, it doesn't, if it sounds fun to you, just do it. And
yeah,
if no
right.
one understands or likes it, who fucking cares?
Yeah.
You know, like, it really.
That's funny.
I think that's the best. I think that's the ultimate measure of a person of like what success is. Are you doing exactly what you want to be doing, and do you not have to do anything that you don't want to do?
You're right. I totally agree with you. Yeah. Good thing I don't feel like I'm doing anything I don't want to do. It's true. I don't. But yeah. 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 If I really want to do a high school play, I could. You're right. Maybe I'd direct one. Maybe if I had kids one day. I don't know. It'd be kind of awkward to like be with teenagers in a play.
I mean, it could, unless it's like a middle school.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. Because I think kids start to get very aware by the time they're in high school. But middle school kids, I feel like they would just treat you like
normal.
You might as well be one of the teachers.
Yeah,
you know?
You're right. You're
so
right.
So it could be more.
You're right.
Fun that way.
Yeah, maybe I'll be a drama school teacher.
Or you could just go super weird with it and be like, I played a tree in a third grade production of Why Does the Sun Shine or something silly like
Into
that.
Into the Woods. I was,
Do you think, do you see yourself with kids at some point?
I definitely want that, yeah. I mean, in the next like 3 years or something.
Yeah?
Yeah. I want to get directing under my belt first, but I mean, I have a one-year-old girl. She turned one on Sunday, and, like, I can't help but I mean, I love her so much, and I just, you know, obviously it inspires you when you're around a baby that you love so much. So, yeah, of course I'd like to have kids.
Oh, that's good.
Do you have any kids?
No, I don't have any kids. But, like I said, I just got engaged a month ago.
Yeah.
And I never thought I wanted kids just because
I feel like they help you die, though. It's like worth all the shit because when you're old and you have nobody,
they help you die.
It's true.
That if there was a commercial for the concept of kids, kids,
they
help
you
die. Oh, I better sign up for that. Well, I just I like to, I like things to be very controlled.
Yeah.
And with kids, you can't. You can't, because you can't control. You just have to roll with shit.
Yeah, you do.
And that's very scary to me. But
it gets easier though. And you'll have a babysitter help you. It's not like, you know.
I know. And my fiance's rad, and I think she, and I know she wants kids, and so I've started to be like, oh, you know, I've started having dreams where I just have a baby, and it's not my baby, but it's my baby. If that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, no.
And
I get
like,
it.
Oh, this is a baby, and it's kind of rad. But I don't know. I feel more comfortable with myself now than I did before. How do you feel? Totally comfortable with yourself?
I feel good about myself.
Good.
Yeah, I feel good.
Good.
Yeah.
How long have you been playing tennis?
Well, I started with Wimbledon. I did a tennis movie.
Yes.
And then I started again. Like I ran into a friend of mine, an old friend of mine, and she was at the – I work out there, and she plays tennis there. And I was like, oh, you started playing tennis? And she's like, yeah, come have a lesson with me. So it's only been a few weeks now, but I love it. It's so fun.
What does it all mean? And it goes right back into the universe. God, please.
Yeah.
Can we stop?
Yeah.
How much time do you – are you done shooting Fargo, I imagine?
Yeah. Oh, we stopped that mid-May.
You know, this idea of doing essentially like a one-season miniseries – it's such a brilliant idea, because part of the thing that scares particularly film actors from getting involved in a television series is that when you know, normally it's like, oh, you potentially sign on for 7 years of your life.
That scares me.
And most people are, that's a very scary thing to do.
Yeah. That's why I'm like, okay, I'll do a 10 episode thing. But yes, to sign on for, I wouldn't be opposed to doing a TV show, but it would have to be something that, like, makes me so happy, the concept and everything, that I wouldn't mind spending. And I wouldn't also – I'd want it to be, like, an ensemble, so it's not just – because it is a lot of TV. It's such hard work. Like, my friend Lizzie Kaplan, she's on Masters of Sex.
Oh, yeah, she's
and
great.
She's exhausted. Like, she goes into a – like, I don't see her or talk to her. She just, like – it's such hard work. So
it is, because your hours are long, and you have to stay focused the whole time.
And the night before, you're just learning your shit for the next day. It's like it's a never ending thing. Like, there's no reprieve, I feel like, with that.
And then when you talk to people who are on that schedule, and you go, "Oh, I saw this episode where you did this," they go, "Oh, really? I don't remember that." You know, because they're just so in the mode of just like getting through every day. I mean, is that? I don't even know if there's a way to prepare. If there's an acting school or something, or even – I don't know if there's a way to even prepare people for that.
I don't think there – I mean, I know she got a lot of B12 shots, and I think at a certain point your mind just goes into autopilot, and like you become this acting machine. You know what I mean? I don't know. Like, I was happy. I know I'm not in one of the episodes of Fargo, and I was like, oh my God, thank God. 2 weeks off? Are you kidding me? Like, this is amazing. Because it did feel like I was cramming for a test a lot of time, and the way you prepare and work with this lady who I work with, it's a very intense process. So, like, every episode, I was doing all this work for, like, each episode. I could only have, let's say, 3 scenes in it, but the amount of work I put into it is like doing a little movie every time.
Sure.
So that was a lot. I was like, how do you do this with people who are on a show consistently? And she's like, well, we have different ways of doing it. But yeah, it's a lot more work than doing a film, I think.
What are your favorite types of characters to play? Is there anything – do you gravitate towards something, or is it just a project-by-project basis?
I think for me it's director-based. Like, I – you know, the same script in another director's hands I would never do.
Sure.
So like, I got to work with Jeff Nichols, who did Mud and Take Shelter, who's an amazing director. I love his films. But, you know – It was a – not that it's a small role. It's important, but it's – I knew that I just wanted to work with him, you know, and I knew that he would make something special. So for me, I just want to be a part of things that people think are good pieces of art. You know what I mean? Like, I want to be a part of good things that last, you know. And I'd rather not make money. I'd rather, you know, wait a year to work again. Like, I waited a year until I did Fargo. So I'd rather just – you know, play tennis, I guess.
I really liked Marie Antoinette.
Yeah.
Because everything was, the movie was like a series of paintings.
It's beautiful.
And it felt so, I don't know. It felt like being absorbed into this world.
Yeah. And that's what Sophia does so well. She's just like an emotional – she gets the emotion out of it. But it is like seeing something so beautiful that you haven't seen before because she – you know, because of what her vision is. And she's such a special director in that way. But even like doing Melancholia, like, you know, I didn't know – that movie would turn out to be so special either. And it's nice to think, okay, and like, I don't know, 20 years or whatever, that might be a film that I did that people have to watch in film school. You know what I mean? Right. Or like Virgin Suicides or Eternal Sunshine. Like it's, I've always tried to pick things that have the potential to live on, you know?
So what is, because you've done a lot of really good fucking movies. Like,
yeah,
what is
well,
it about?
I have good taste.
I know.
That's what it comes down to.
Is that really, I mean, like, it's just like a gut, it's a gut feeling.
It's a gut feeling, but you can tell, okay, this is going to be crap. Or not. Like, you know what has the potential to possibly be good, you know? And you take chances, but like, you know, I've done plenty of crappy movies too, but it boils down to taste, in my opinion, completely.
But you just don't know. You read a script and every, you know, like no one goes into a movie and be like, guys, let's make a piece of shit. Like, you half-ass it. Who gives a shit about the lighting? I mean, like everyone comes together, you know, the orchestration. And it really is an orchestration.
Yeah.
There's so many different sections that really need to align.
But that's why I'm director-driven, because I'd rather have the crappiest script and know that this director's work is amazing, because you can turn anything – you can make anything good, I think. Like, if you're a great director, I really believe that.
Yeah.
It's like all about the director to me.
Are you in the movie you're directing?
No. Mm-mm. I wouldn't do that to myself. That's a lot of work.
That feels like a lot of work.
Yeah. And it's also, I hate when I watch movies actors direct and they put themselves in. It just feels like, it's so ego. Like, I don't know. It's so, I'm not into it. I don't know.
It is equivalent to, and this is something I used to do.
Oh, sorry.
No, not that. It's equivalent to going to karaoke a lot and just doing a song you know you're good at. You know what I mean? Like putting yourself in a movie, like I'm going to highlight the best parts of my face and my performance.
God.
You know what I mean? It's such a, it feels like kind of a.
I don't think I could judge myself though, honestly, fairly, like acting wise. I don't think I could do that. Like edit myself. I don't think I could do that.
Do you like sitting in an edit room?
I mean, it's like, it gets really dark, you know? And you're like, I don't know. I always felt like I've done two shorts and I don't know. You like go outside for a second. You're like, what? You're hit by the sun. Just,
what day is it? Emerge like a mole person.
Well, because you can sit there for hours and you get in this hole and you're just eating crap. And it's like writing. You just get in this hole. Like me and my friend, we didn't get out of robes for like days. And we're just, oh, thank God for Postmates. It's like we've ingested Taco Bell, Del Taco, pizza, In-N-Out. It's like, what else crap can we put in our bodies? It's disgusting, actually, the food, the amount of food we ate during writing and like the choices we made. But that's what you do. It's just, you got to. It's just like Postmates it is, you know?
Do you schedule?
That's why I'm trying to be healthy. I balance it out. I'm not like this.
Well, you're drinking something green, which equals health.
Yeah. No,
I mean, what are you talking about? You rolling here in a tennis outfit drinking a green drink. You seem like the healthiest person.
Because for the last 2 weeks, I've been eating like crap writing with my friend. That's why, because I have to balance it back out again. It was disgusting. We had an array of like Parmesan, ranch, ketchup, Del Scorcho sauce. Like, you know, it was like, and we just had a platter of your options of whatever you wanted to squeeze on, you know, whatever quesadilla. But we did learn Del Taco quesadillas are delicious to reheat in the oven. They really get like a pastry kind of quality.
Oh, that's good to know, actually.
Yeah, no, a lot of the things we had were good heated up in the oven again, which is.
The older you get, you really realize how what you put in your body has a dramatic effect on your emotional state,
mm-hmm.
like what you put in your body regularly. And you do, you know, I feel like if, you know, I would say to anyone, if you're kind of getting to a place where you're feeling bad and you start having these large existential crises, stop for a second and go, am I under stress? Am I eating a lot of shit?
Yeah.
Have I been sedentary? And if the answer is yes, all those go, maybe I shouldn't tackle life at the moment.
Yeah.
You know, like maybe I should try to put some healthier things. Because when you do, it really does affect, you know, your state.
Yeah, no, I know. Yeah. I would. Yeah. It gets funny at our house. I mean, we didn't wash our hair. It was just, we lived in our robes for a while.
That's pretty cool, riding. Though.
It is. It's great. But then you, yeah, you need to like eat a salad or something, you know?
And then your body's like, what is this?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's amazing how you can, you know, you mentioned before about being adaptive. Your body will literally adapt to anything.
Yeah.
Anything. And, you know, you could be eating sugar all the time, but then if you stop, it's hard to stop, but if you stop for like a month and go back to it, it's such a weird, like your body doesn't like it anymore. You almost reject it.
Well, I did a movie with my girlfriends, Laura and Kate. They have this fashion line called Rodarte, and it was their first movie they wrote and directed. And after Fargo, I had eaten like crap in Calgary. I was just eating like cheese and bread in different forms. And I didn't care because Peggy's not, she's a Midwestern girl. I wanted her to look a little meat and potatoes anyway. But it's freezing outside. Patrick Wilson's going for runs. I'm like, I can't. I'm sorry. Like, there's no gym inside.
Showboat.
I'm not going running. But he looks so beautiful, and that's why. He, like, runs every day.
Sure, yeah.
And, like, here I am with Jesse, and we're like, Plemons. And we're like, oh, do you have a frozen pizza in your house? Because I ran out. Like, so that's the difference. So that's why Jesse and I look like the out-of-shape couple, and he looks like a golden god. But then after that, my girlfriends put me on this diet. And I went to a nutritionist, and they delivered me food every day, and I didn't have dressing. I mean, I literally just ate vegetables and salads and these special health shakes. I was so miserable because I was just done with Fargo, and then I wanted to take a break, and then I had to prepare for this role. And my month of preparation was like not eating anything that I like to eat. And I was so miserable. But it's interesting what you said about the sugar thing and everything, because even having a bite of something normal, like a potato chip, was the saltiest thing I'd ever put in my mouth. Because when you take a break from all of that, it's weird how much your body's affected by like all of it. I had to give up coffee. I had to give up everything. It was terrible. It was terrible.
Are you a coffee drinker?
I think it's worse than being pregnant, because at least when you're pregnant, you can like have coffee. You can have things.
Right.
Like this was like nothing. Nothing. It was like, everything was so boring. I remember once they made me a brown rice pasta, and I was like licking the plate. I was so excited that there was like any
some kind of flavor
shaped of pasta at all. It was, yeah.
That's so funny that your brain was like, oh, that's supposed to be.
I just had blueberries for snacks and things. It was so depressing. Like no salted on, you know, nothing.
Did
like,
you feel better though?
You know, people would be like, your skin looks really good. I'm like, yeah, because I've basically not put anything toxic in my body in 2 weeks. That's why I look so good. But I'm miserable.
Yeah. I feel like over time, though, you would have, you know, because I think your brain does do a thing at a certain point where you're like, well, you can't be unhappy all the time. So I feel like your brain just goes, okay, I guess I just like this now. I guess I'll just like this now.
I don't know. Like no ketchup. Like no nothing. Not even condiments to make.
Wait, no ketchup?
Oh, well, you know what I mean? Like not even a condiment. Like nothing.
Oh, wow.
I feel like Bragg's is the only thing you can put on anything that's like amino acids things.
You know Bragg's
like,
apple cider vinegar.
Like I know now all these diety things like stevia drops to make your coffee sweet in case you want something sweet. And like dandelion powder to make coffee. And like obviously I'm back on coffee again. Like as soon as I was done with this, I was like, no, I'm drinking coffee. But yeah, I had a lot of dietary restrictions. It wasn't fun. And my mom makes big Sunday dinners every Sunday, so I would sit there and everyone would be eating and drinking whatever they wanted. And like I remember once, I think it was the Super Bowl, and I was like, it wasn't the Super Bowl, it was something, she had chips and onion dip out, and I was like, fuck this, I'm having one. I was like three chips and onion dip, and I was like, I'm breaking the rules. But I was so angry that I had to do it.
But it seems like it worked out okay. Coffee,
no,
I can't.
It did. I looked better in that movie, so there you go.
And was your first cup of coffee? Was your first cup of coffee back? Like just?
No, it wasn't. I don't know. No, it wasn't actually. I started drinking coffee again on the movie because I was just like, I need to actually do the scenes too. So
yeah,
I can't be like tired because I'm not eating.
You want your
anything.
Brain to shut down?
Yeah, no.
So with everything that you did with Fargo and then this film that you're writing and co-writing and directing. What is it that you ultimately want? Like, what do you want to show the world? What's important to you?
I just want to be a part of good things that people like. You know what I mean? That's all I want. You know, I just, you work really hard on something, And you just want people to love it. You know, that's all. That's all you can ask for with that stuff. I mean, yeah. I mean, I the movie that I have coming out next year, I've seen. I think it's really good. I feel like people really like it. It's a original sci-fi movie. That's really cool. Yeah, it's great. Have you seen Take Shelter?
No, I haven't seen it.
You would love it. It's really good. That's this director who did Mud, too.
All right.
He's special, that director.
All right. I will, based on your recommendation, I will watch it.
It makes it like Midnight Special, let's call it. It makes me feel like it feels like an old Amblin movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it does. It's cool.
Oh, that's good.
It's got a little bit of Close Encounters vibe to it. It's really good.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Are you a sci-fi fan?
I mean, good sci-fi, yeah.
Sure.
I mean, yeah. I'm not. I don't know.
You know? You don't know everything?
No, I don't.
Yeah, because, you know, sci-fi and horror are tricky genres because they're genres that can blow up and be, like, you know, for not a lot of money, can blow up. So as a result, particularly in horror, it's so flooded with a lot of not great things, people just trying to do a cash grab.
Yeah.
So when you find a really good one, it's a big deal.
Oh, no, I know. The one I did with my girlfriends this summer has a horror element to it for sure. And like one of my favorite movies and one of the best independent films is Texas Chainsaw Massacre. You know, it is. And that's like one of the first indie, and it's so beautiful to watch. It's like one of the prettiest movies too. So I'm into horror, good horror, but I'm not like, I don't know every new horror movie or anything.
But
like
do you
that.
Think you do you think these are genres that you would want to direct in? Do you want to
horror,
tackle them?
My first short film was like a horror movie. It was a ghost story with Winona Ryder. So, but it was I'm into that stuff. Yeah.
Do you think that a director's job should be to find one thing and try to explore that over and over again, or do you think it's better to I'm going to try a little bit of this and a little bit of this and then a little bit of that?
I mean, that's like real talent to be able to do all that. I think I mean somebody like it's like Ang Lee, somebody who's done that, like you're like he directed that and that and that, like he's genreless, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think that's pretty hard to do. I don't think many directors do that.
Ron Howard was on the podcast about 3 hours ago.
Oh, really?
And it was the same kind of thing where I know the stuff he's directed, but then you forget some of them and you're like, oh, he did Cocoon. Oh,
right.
Oh, he did Parenthood. Like, and right. You go through and you're like, holy shit.
Yeah, he's incredible.
Yeah. But, you know, just so you know, you said a very similar thing that he said, which was about not trying to control too much of the experience and just kind of go, oh, you start here and you kind of let it be. And and that's why I feel like I would make a terrible director, because I just don't – being able to let go in that way.
But like as an actor, that's what you have to do. So I feel like because he grew up doing that too, I think that makes you a different type of director probably.
I guess so. You seem more attuned to how to communicate with actors and how to get what you want and, you know. And have you even thought about – like, do you think about that, about how to communicate with people? Do you think how to get, like, if you need something?
I don't think I'm good at that, actually. I don't think I'm good at that, actually. I think I can explain what I want in the scene. But also, I want their input. I want their help, too. So it's, I know what the vibe and the tone should be, but you have to be delicate in how you ask an actor for that, too. Because people can get very easily, like, offended or shut down.
Sure.
So you kind of get to know their style, I think, when you're working with them, and then you either just let them alone, know that their third takes, they're where they have it, and like let them explore. So I'm not a big – I don't think I'll be a big note giver.
Yeah.
Unless something's really wrong.
What you want to do is right after a scene, you want to knock the camera out of the way and go, why are you trying to fuck me? what do you need? You know, just like get in their face and really.
Yeah. Because I'm not going to make anyone cry or anything like that. That's not my method.
No, but it is like you're right. You do have to dance around the sort of because they're really putting themselves on the line, and that's attached to their egos and that's attached to their insecurities. And how do you navigate that minefield?
Yeah.
Especially if you're empathetic to it, because you know what yours are and you know what would be.
You know what I always do if someone wants to talk? I'm like, I'm not ready to be talked to yet. Like, if anyone wants to give me a note, like, I know because I know myself, and I just like, I'm not a big, I don't like a lot of notes because I already know what I need to get done. You know what I mean? And
right.
If I haven't communicated that, then I fail on that. You know, so I already kind of like, I know, I should know my character better than anyone else, I think. So, especially with something with like Fargo, you get a different director every 2 weeks.
Right.
So that was weird too. And some days, one day I had three different directors
Oh, wow.
in one day. So I didn't at first. I really did not like that, and then I got to know each one better and better, and it was, I got adapted to that style, but.
Oh yeah, because you're constantly having to recalibrate.
Yeah.
The relationship that you're clicking into.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem like it'd be a good crash course in just seeing as many directors as possible and seeing how people work.
Yeah.
Well, I'm excited. I will be excited to hear what this project is that you know when you're able to announce it.
I'll tell you when
it.
The mic's off.
Okay. But when will you guys be able to?
I guess, like, we got to get financing together and hopefully, I don't know, they always like to do that stuff around film festivals, I feel like. So maybe around Sundance they will or something.
Nice.
Yeah.
And then in general, as we're kind of winding down, what do you like? What's fun? What's fun for you? What do you like to do that's fun?
Me, I mean, my best friend has a one-year-old.
Yeah.
So I just hang at their house, have some wine, watch some Nashville. You know what I mean? Like, not much. Like, my life is at their house mostly now because they're my, you know, she's my best friend. So I just hang out with her after work. But in the day, I mean, I've just been writing and, like, I'm always, like, reading something or, you know, trying to figure out what I want to do next. So a lot of reading and meetings and that kind of stuff.
Now tennis. What kind of a tennis player are you? I mean, in terms of...
I'm okay.
I mean, not in terms of skill level. I mean, like, how do you approach the game? And do you feel like there are things about your personality that you will discover by playing a competitive...
You know, it's funny with tennis because you start to learn something and then you have to, like, totally... Today I actually had this new method in my head where I'd sing to myself with the ball and the racket so I'd get it in tune better, which clicked in something new today. So it just kind of, like, it slowly clicks new things for you, but the less effort you put into it is the best way to do it. But I'm still learning. Like, I'm not, you know, out there playing tons of games or anything.
Right.
Yeah.
It's good, though. It's good to get outside and take advantage of our...
Beautiful weather.
Our wonderful Southern California weather, which, you know, everyone shits on Los Angeles.
I don't. Like, I love it.
I do too.
It's great.
It is great.
I love it. It's beautiful. It's
already winter in other parts of the country.
I know.
You know, like, I'm looking outside. There's like three clouds.
It's great. I love it. I'm not mad at our weather at all.
I'm not either. Mm-hmm. I appreciate you, Los Angeles weather.
Me too.
And, honestly, anytime you want to come back on, please feel free.
Thank you.
Come back on and congratulations, everything. And Fargo is Monday nights at 10?
Yeah.
On FX.
Yeah.
God, dude. I pitched a show to FX not that long ago. Yeah. And just looking at all of the shows in there, it's...
I know, it's amazing.
Unbelievable, like, how many good shows they've made.
I know. Sons of Anarchy, Louie, like, I don't know.
Yeah, Sons of Anarchy and Louie and The Shield and
right.
Justified. And, I mean, it's
a
just,
lot.
And Fargo.
Yeah,
I mean, it's,
they're good. And they're all so nice, too. They took us out to dinner recently and all the big heads, everyone's like a really kind person. Like, it was a very nice environment. You know, everyone was very proud to be working on something and so humble about it, but yet, like, running a kick-ass channel, too, you know.
Well, I think in order to attract... the level of people that they're attracting to work there, that's probably very important.
Yeah, and creatively, they let people do what they want to do.
Yeah.
They really do.
Because Fargo, I think one of the things that a show like Fargo has is, you know, when I see the entire cast, I go, well, there's a million other things that cast could be doing, and for some reason, they decided that this is how they wanted to, that this is something that they wanted to work on. Like, they're there because they chose to be, and that kind of makes it that makes it a little more special.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, the first season was so good that I was like, okay, this is going to be – there's already a well-oiled machine in place, so yeah. We would really have to be bad to totally screw it all up, you know?
Well, it doesn't sound like that's the case.
No, Noah Hawley. You should interview Noah. You would love talking to him, actually.
All right.
He's so, so, so smart and really cool. He lives in Austin, but he's in L.A. a lot, too.
Oh, good. Yeah. Austin, the tiny little, the burgeoning entertainment, you know, Robert Rodriguez's whole operation is down there.
I know.
Fantastic Fest is down there. Like, it really is it's a hotbed of... activity
right
now.
I'm going to go next year for South by Southwest for the movie that I did with Jeff Nichols because he lives in Austin too. So,
oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really good.
And so does Jesse Plemons, who is in Fargo. He's Austin Valley guy.
Oh,
too.
Shit.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah. It, at a certain point, you know, there's going to be a tipping point.
There is. I agree. But it's great for now.
But, you know, the great thing is that you don't really have to live anywhere specific and be able to do this stuff.
No, I mean, I live in LA because that's where my friends and family are. But if they didn't live in LA, I definitely wouldn't spend all my time here for sure not. I would live wherever they lived, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are there other cities that you like?
I actually really like Austin. To be honest, I don't think I like Nashville, but I don't know if I'd want to live there. Austin has been one of my favorite cities in the U.S.
Have you ever been to Bloomington, Indiana?
No.
Okay.
Oh, you know what? I love Athens, Georgia, actually.
Athens is great.
I love Athens. I could live in Athens, too. I could also, I've heard Asheville, North Carolina is great, too.
You know what it is? There's a formula.
Yeah.
And the formula is this. In most places, when you have the state school, there's generally a cool artistic community around it. So Nashville, not a state school, but a large college. So yeah. Nashville, you have Vanderbilt. You have University of Texas in Austin. And Asheville, you have a big college. Bloomington, you have the University right. of Indiana.
And Athens, too.
And it sort of infuses the culture with like budding creativity. And
yeah, you get the cool young bands coming through. Like it's it keeps it. The food good, but a sense of community still, and those are smaller towns. Yeah, I got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then you're going to do your crazy tour, your college town tour.
Yeah.
When you're doing your school play. And
I'll bring the school play on the road.
That would be so amazing.
Yeah.
At some point, just do something weird.
Maybe I will.
All right, good. Kirsten, thank you so much for being
Thanks for having on the
podcast. Me. Enjoy your burrito,
Thanks,
everyone.
Thanks, Chris. Enjoy your burrito.
Yeah, that's how we end the podcast.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.